If I have, could I have everybody state their name around the table so I can keep track of who's talking when, so. So you'll be number one, so.
I'm Ruth Hollowell.
Might tell us, when you were born and where you were born?
Oh, I was, born to April the 3rd, 1916, in Missouri.
Lots of Missouri people in Boise City.
Yep. You ran into a lot of them.
Okay, you get to be number two.
Okay. Marietta Foreman, M-A-R-I-E-T-T-A.
Okay.
24th of August in 22.
Here in Boise City, or?
Where was I born?
Yeah.
Barber County, Kansas.
Okay. And last but not least, number three.
I'm Fern McDaniel Allen, and I was born near Bertrand in Cimarron County in
She's gonna
March,
admit.
March the 9th, 1916. Just slightly older than Ms. Holloway.
Whole month and 6 days.
Oh, we got some.
I heard another voice.
Yeah. You're the only native of the area here today, then.
The only what?
You were born right here, the only person that was born.
I went to Hawaii once. We did for 10 days, and that's about all I've ever been out of Cimarron County.
Wow. But. You chose a long way to go.
So why?
Well, it was a meat. I mean, it was a farm program.
I think you know. Hello, everybody here. This is Steve.
We have number four here.
Mrs. McEwen. We kind of went around the table, and everyone said their birthday and where they were born.
Okay.
So, if you don't mind telling us.
not at all. I was born April 2nd, 1913.
Here in Cimarron County?
Texas County, just over the line.
Well, you're closer to
a mile and a half.
You're still a foreigner, though, I guess.
Yeah, I'm a foreigner.
All right. Well, these talks are just very informal. There's no structure to them, really. We just kind of want to just run through some of the topics on these pages in no particular order, or there's no. We don't have to go down a line or anything. It's just, you know, as we bring up a topic, you can talk about what you remember about that, or what you think about that. So were all of you growing up in, well, when did you move to this area?
In 1919.
All right, so
and I was in Texas County too until 43.
Oh, okay. So you were only three then when.
I wasn't quite three.
When you
we came in February.
All right.
I don't remember anything about Missouri.
Yeah.
And let's see, who else was not born here? Barbara County.
I came from Kansas in 1930, March.
Also a fairly latecomer then, coming into the dirty 30s.
Well, it wasn't what I'd call dirty then. That happened in 33 and 34.
Yeah.
And on.
We've had a lot of people talk, or some people talk about the rain that was here in 31, how it was a wet season then. And then it dried up real fast. Were all of you growing up in a rural area or in farming lives?
Rural.
No town people here?
No plumbing.
No plumbing. And farmers.
Yeah?
Yeah, my folks are farmers also.
In the very far away from here, outside of the area? Or
In Texas County.
Mm-hmm. I was born and raised 6 miles east of the Griggs store. You know where the Griggs store is?
I don't know where that is.
It's about 25 miles southeast of here.
Oh, so quite a ways away from here then.
About 25 miles.
That's not far.
Y'all probably came through Fort Connors.
Only I'm
coming
this
out
way.
Here
and so am I.
Wow. Yeah. Well, then again.
I guess so. Well, see, I've never been to the Panhandle before, so I was just looking around at everything. So I don't know where I was.
Well, that's close to where I was raised.
Okay.
She and I were raised not too far apart.
Well, so were we.
Well, one of the things we do sometimes is to talk about a typical. As you were growing up in your farming area, like what a typical day would have been like for you all, and you know, if you remember you know, the 20s and 30s, what kind of what a typical day might have included for you guys? What would you have done, you know, between waking up and going to sleep?
I always got up and we milked 10 or 12 cows, my sisters and I. And then we had a cream separator that we run the milk through to get the cream out, a hand turn. And then we had some calves that were bucket fed, and so when we got the milk run through the separator, then we'd take it and feed the calves. And then, but by that time we was ready to have breakfast. And then if it was school, during school term, well, we had to hurry to get ready to go to school, and we walked a mile to school.
Does that sound familiar to everybody else, or?
Well, I was raised a little different because I was an only child. And my dad farmed with horses to a great extent. It was with me, I got up at 5:30 in the morning, took the saddle horse, and went and hunted the horses. Had a fair idea where they would be, but this is what you call open range. You know,
yeah.
As a kid, I knew where the best forage was. So I'd go get the horses, bring them in. In the meantime, my dad had put the feed out for the horses and the cows. Then we milked. And then same thing, separated the milk. And by the time that was done, it was... look to see if the school bus was coming, if we had a good, what I call a good driver. I only lived about 3/4 of a mile from school, and the law was you had to be 2 miles or more, or you walked. So if we had a bus driver that was nice, I could watch for the bus, run down to the road, and ride. Okay. Otherwise, I had to start out and walk, and to this day, my husband can't understand me and breakfast. I never sat down to a breakfast table until I got to college. There were too many things to do. And my breakfast, when I went to school, my mom insisted on a glass of milk and then anything else that might be left over from the day before, whether it was a potato, a piece of meat. And I stood up and ate it and watched for the bus. You know, that's, my mother put up my lunch to go to school, you know, while I was doing these other things, but I wasn't raised like other kids. I was the only one.
Mm-hmm. What about you two and your morning chores or daily routine?
When it was school time, I had to get up and ride my pony 4.5 miles to school, North Fork School, every morning, and it was northeast of the home place, and so we had to face the north winds 4.5 miles to school on the pony. Red Wing was her name.
It was your pony's name?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
And rode that pony for 8 years, going to grade school, that little North Fork schoolhouse.
I bet the pony would know its way there.
Know its way. And it got kind of contrary, and my brother was just older than me a couple of years. He rode a larger horse, and when I had to go for some reason without him, why, get to the first gate, I'd get off and open that gate, and then this pony would stand there and rear up, and I couldn't make her go. Sometimes I'd have to go clear back home to get through that gate with my pony, get somebody to take her through. She'd just stand there and rear up because she knew I couldn't make her go like my brother did.
She was a contrary pony.
She was spoiled.
What about you and your days?
In my grade school, we just lived a mile. By 1930, I started to high school at Felt, and that was eight miles away, and Daddy had to take us to meet the bus by that time. All the time before, not anything like a bus in my district. Everybody rode horses or drove a wagon and team or walked, and we just lived a mile, so we walked. But 1930, I started high school, and I had to ride the bus, but I can't remember that Daddy milked cows, but I don't think he had us get up and help him milk in the wintertime. But we always had a big breakfast. Mama cooked. We always had hogs to butcher and We had biscuits and gravy and...
Did you sit down when you ate it?
Yes. And we all sat together. I mean, around the table. We all sat together.
What was a typical breakfast like for everybody else? I think we heard yours.
Yeah, mine was whatever was handy.
Well, we usually had bacon and eggs, and sometimes gravy and bread of some kind.
Yeah. We always liked to eat. We always did, too. We always had breakfast, a good breakfast every morning. Lots of times biscuits and gravy.
Any evening chores, or when you'd come home from school, or things that had to be done in the evening?
The milking had to be done all over again.
Yeah, the eggs and feed the chickens. Yes. And
bring in the coal and fill the coal oil lamps.
Yeah, fill the lights.
The reservoir on the home comfort cook stove, carried from the windmill.
We had to bring in cobs for starting the fire and sometimes burning to keep the fire going. But Daddy did have some corn and thrashed shell the corn, and so we had cobs. But in the evening, we walked after the cows mostly. My brother and I, he was four years younger than I were, but we were kind of partners, and we walked after the cows, and then we milked the cows. Generally, we had four or five. And of course, we sold cream, and that was part of our living. As in 1930, my dad built a chicken house that was big. It had hold 200 hens,
It
was made out of adobe. He made the adobe and had a rock foundation and. Sometimes people wonder how we made it, but we had incubators in the cellar. There was about four or five, and Mama would hatch maybe 2,000 chickens in the spring. And we'd sell the roosters, and sometimes we got a quarter apiece for them or something like that. Sometimes 25 cents a pound, but whenever they got to be about 2 pounds, there was pretty good market for them, and then kept the pullets, hens, and so we had, besides having a big garden spot, of course when the sand got to blowing, we had tow sacks all around the fence of the garden to kind of protect, but you couldn't have too awful much. You'd plant it and then a sandstorm had come along. I'm talking too much here, but we had two different kinds of sandstorms. You know, I think a lot of these like this, think about the rolling kind that came in. Well, what we had, the fellow right across the road from us broke out a section or quarter section, half section of grassland, which Daddy begged him not to do, because he knew. He said, well, if I ever get able, I'll buy it. Well, he never would have gotten able, but anyway, he broke it out. So from the southwest, we had, every time the wind got up just a little bit from the southwest, it'd just sweep right across, because we just across the road from that. And so that was, sometimes the wind would get high enough and the land was sandy enough that it would blow, but there wasn't one of those rolling sandstorms ever.
Like the Black Sunday.
Uh-uh. Yeah.
What you're saying is what we all contended with, yeah. That you literally blew under, maybe the wind and the dirt wasn't over that high.
Yeah,
that
it was just a
it
sweeping,
just covered, it just,
sweeping.
Yeah, it just swept.
Could you even see it coming in? Was it noticeable when it was?
Well, you know how the wind does. It just, in the morning, it just gradually gets up.
Bills.
Right.
And then it goes down by after sundown or something like that, and that's just a typical
And I don't
day.
Know whether you folks realize, they'd plow this land, and if there was a subsoiler, that was what you had in behind your plow to drop the seed in that extra little slit. And it would just sweep it as that. And you'd have these little subsoiler marks out in your field.
Yeah.
And so then the next year they'd plow it again, and it went down that much deeper.
Well, if there was rain to plow with.
Well, that's true, too, but
a few years there,
I'm from Kansas, but did we ever cuss the Kansans because they were suitcase farmers?
Yeah.
They would come in, and that started about 27 where we were, and plow this land, and they got a good return on their wheat crops. So, boy, we bought some more, and I don't mean we did, but they did, mm-hmm. and plowed another section, as she says. Then they'd go back to Kansas. If they'd plant it, maybe they had the moisture, maybe they didn't, but they'd plant it and they'd leave. And the people that still lived here endured the dirt because sometimes it didn't rain.
Right. You guys remember the suitcase farmers and the absentee farmers and things like that?
Yes. I kind of remember that.
I bet you do.
I'm older than she is.
But trouble is, we suffered from that because we were from Kansas, mm-hmm. and most of those suitcase farmers were from Kansas. But we weren't a suitcase farmer. We were stuck with it.
Right.
But you were still from Kansas.
But we were still from Kansas, and it was a stigma.
Right. Yeah.
Right in the community where we lived, we didn't have very many suitcase farmers. Oh. Most people were there, and it just... Our neighbors, you know.
Most people owned their land.
Yeah.
My dad owned his land.
I've heard a lot written about the absentee owners, the suitcase farmers, and how they weren't very well liked. Yeah.
They weren't, and, well, this is kind of off the subject, but my husband said that, I still call them suitcase farmers, came out, somebody stole my combine and my tractor last winter while I was gone. His dad said, no, there they are, and he took him out to two sand dunes, and just part of the grain bin of this combine was sticking out, and I think some little part, maybe the exhaust, was sticking out on the tractor, but they were still where he left them.
It sure covered things up all right.
Mm-hmm. Well, the country where she and I lived was really sandy. It was a real sandy. Well, how about...
It wasn't very sandy where I lived.
It was tighter ground, wasn't it?
It was so sandy.
It was tighter down east of Griggs.
Yeah. It was just sandy enough that, you know, and we had drifts 3 to 4 feet around our house, where just, and every time the wind blew, well, they'd change when they was taller. Mm-hmm. I mean, they'd
just shift. If you've ever been, excuse me, Fern, to the sand dunes up here in Colorado or white sands, mm-hmm. they move. Right. Our land did the same thing. It'd be one place today, be someplace else tomorrow.
So you two were basically north.
We were west.
Northwest of where we are now. Is that right? And then you.
I'm a half a mile from where I was born. Not born, raised.
You guys were south. Is that right? South.
Southeast Boy City, about 25 miles.
So maybe 50 miles separated you all, mm-hmm. and in that short of space, you have totally different experiences.
Difference in the land.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Well, there's really, you go out that way. There's tighter land in spots, and you know some sections will be fairly tight, or some parts of it, and then parts of it will be so sandy that you just can't. Even nowadays, when we do no-till farming and things like that, you can't fertilize too much in that sand because sometimes fertilizer will, it just rains and it just goes on down. It doesn't do your crop any good in sand. So.
It's too porous.
But you mentioned your house like this. I should have brought that picture that I took of Floyd Jacobs' house. My friend's house was all it shows is a roof. It was completely around their house. You went up over this sand dune, and there was a spot, what would you say, Fern, 3 to 4 feet out from the house all the way around the house that you could walk on hard dirt. I bet there's a picture of that around here, because I took the picture, but I had it developed at the drugstore down here, and apparently they saw it, and it went all over the country.
So much for your privacy.
Well, yeah, I didn't care, but it was such an unusual picture, and people knew the locality. I was closer to where she lived than where I lived. But
you guys didn't have the dunes around your house like that, or...
Some, but not as bad as they did out west, the boys.
But we did. It would drift kind of like snow does when the snow drifts. It would be little sand piles and things around.
We had sandstorms and blowed out crops.
You remember, like, she was talking about how people would ask other farmers not to plow up this land. You know, do you remember that going on? Like,
I sure do.
Kind of people telling, like, if a farmer said, I'm breaking out this section, you know, and... would the community get together or somebody would say, hey, don't do it. Not a good idea.
But please leave the grass.
it was theirs. They had a right, and they did it.
Don't you think that's what caused the dust?
Well, that's kind of what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. And
because too many people broke out ground that should never
have been. Yes, that's it.
Never been broke out.
That was then
didn't know how to take care of it to keep it from blowing.
When the tractors came along, about 1929 or 30,
they could cover more acres.
They started breaking it out with just horses. Daddy always farmed with horses until that time. Then after that time, he didn't do much farming, I think. He did trade his horses for a tractor, which was a bad mistake.
Why was that bad?
Well, it was just starting of the drought.
Oh.
And.
But my dad had both. And he had to get rid of the horses because we couldn't raise anything to feed them.
Yeah.
He literally had to dispose of his horses for lack of... But it never rained on our place in 1934. It never even sprinkled.
I can't remember that good.
Well, Mabry and I discuss it because he lived 12 miles, my husband, to the northwest. And he said, we got a rain. We had the best crop. And a hailstorm came along. He said, you smell like an ensilage pit. But they said up to Wheelis, which was 3 miles farther from him, they didn't get any rain. But we never got a drop that fell.
Huh. You remember?
My dad farmed with horses, and some of the time he had to buy hay, you know, that we didn't have enough feed to get them through the winter.
Yeah. Remember a year without rain? Do you remember?
Oh, yes.
I was interested that farmers at the time actually kind of knew what was going on, because so much of the time you read about it now, it seems like they weren't aware of what they were doing. You know, they weren't aware that what they were doing was causing damage, and that it sounds like here you're saying they knew what was going on, mm-hmm. and they were trying to stop it from happening. And I'm surprised they didn't take stronger measures at times.
What could they have taken?
I don't know.
That was it. There was nothing. You know, if somebody owns something, he can do what he wants to with it back then. Now the government would step in.
Yeah.
But then it was his. He could do what he wanted to.
I guess just beyond simple asking, or saying maybe telling him it might not be a good idea or something.
About that time's when the Haney plow and some of those were invented or built to rip up the land to keep it from blowing, or help keep it from blowing.
Can you describe that plow and what it did to help stop the erosion?
Well, it had shovels. Only they were just about this wide. They had strips of iron. I'm not very good at describing things. But anyway, there would be several across. And you had to pull it with a tractor. I mean, it was... but it would... you could put it in the ground and it would kind of rip up the soil. But, of course, out our way, it was sand clear down to...
and the thing is, those things cost money, which we didn't have, but what my dad did, they called them pitters. They took a half disc and put on a rod, one on here and then the other one's the other side, and staggered them, and the net result was they dug a hole about this big that would catch any water that came along, was also deter that sweeping wind a little bit. And then when you had to farm it on a tractor without rubber tires, it broke your back.
It broke a few other things too.
No, it didn't seem to, but boy, I had to farm that pitted ground. Oh, I hated those pitters. My dad says, well, they do conserve some moisture. It don't blow quite so bad. But, oh. You know, you were just like this all the time. You just fell in and out, in and out. Those wheels.
Well, how do you think the sandstorms and dust storms maybe changed your life a little bit when it started, when the drought came, the wind picked up? Did you notice a change in your lifestyle? Did your chores change at all, maybe, or the things you did each day? Did the weather affect that at all?
I don't think there's made me much change. We just had to get by from day to day, and you know, you just get used to it when it goes on for years.
And as a kid, you don't think much about it. Well, I know one thing I got to thinking the other day. We had a garden then. We didn't have a garden till times got hard. My folks were not gardeners, and we didn't have a garden after we didn't have to have. But we lived off of this cream and chickens and the garden and anything you could preserve.
Did you guys remember having one that you ate from?
Yeah, we did.
Those kids had to do lots of work in it too.
That was it.
What was typical things grown?
Pole weeds in the garden, I'd do that.
Pole weeds. So many trees you had to hold between, you know, before your dad got home.
What kind of things were you raising in your garden?
Tomatoes especially, and green beans,
onions,
lettuce,
rhubarb.
Yeah.
I hated it.
Big, big long row of rhubarb.
Yeah.
You hated the rhubarb?
I hated the rhubarb when I was a kid, and I just love it now. So I go to the store and it's kind of expensive.
You remember kind of relying more on that garden times
had
got
to.
A little harder?
If you wanted to eat, you better raise it.
Raised it.
My mother canned a lot. There's a big family of us. We had half gallon jars.
Big ones.
That she canned. We had peach trees and tomatoes, lots of tomatoes.
We had peach trees, cherry trees, and strawberries, and lots of good stuff.
You think that family garden was a key to your survival out here, or making it through that time period?
I think it helped, and then my dad raised hogs. You know, we had our own meat, we had chickens, and our cream and milk and butter and things like that. We never went hungry. I'm thankful for that.
The one thing they had here in Boise City was a mill, flour mill, and really and truly, at times we in our family we literally lived on wheat and meat, because you took your wheat to the mill. And you got flour, you got cracked wheat, which was cereal, and I hate it to this day.
I thought that was pretty good.
Oh, I hate that stuff. It's grainier than cream of wheat. It's just cracked wheat.
Did you mix up your cornbread and milk?
Yeah.
Mix it up into a big mushy kind of mush.
That was about ever evening meal.
My husband says that was at their house. Stupid me, as I say, I was from Kansas. I never ate cornbread till I was grown. I never even tasted it. We didn't know anything about cornmeal.
Yeah.
Literally. It was flour.
Do you remember the things you ate, or getting better? Like, you remember, like, when there was more food on the table, or better variety, or, you know, as the times picked up and things got better? Do you remember a change in
in your lifestyle at all? Maybe more treats coming in?
Well, I'm sure it got better.
Yeah, we got more treats. This time's got better, I think. But my family always had plenty to eat.
Yeah. What was a good treat for you?
Usually candy. When I was a kid, we lived quite a ways from town, and we didn't get to town too often to get candy, but I still like my candy.
You remember some favorite candy you had as a child?
Anything that's chocolate and nuts. Still like it.
We lived, well, Elkhart, Kansas, and Texoma, Oklahoma. We were just halfway between on the main road that went to these towns. And so my dad, we had to go in a wagon with horses, and we have to leave very early and get back late to make it all in one day. But every once in a while, especially for the 4th of July or any special occasion, my dad would take some quilts or some old things along to wrap the ice and get like 100 pounds of ice, and then we'd make ice cream. And that was a special time with us. We always had ice cream for the 4th of July.
It was us too.
Is that the only time he would buy ice?
We didn't buy ice only when we was going to make ice cream.
He'd go into town and buy a 100-pound block and...
Mm-hmm. And wrap it up real good so it wouldn't melt till we got back home.
But hold
with
up.
Newspapers and and quilts and things like old quilts and things like that.
How long would it last? How long would that last?
Well, we'd make the ice cream the next day.
Oh, wow. You guys remember buying ice at all, anything like
that? My grandpa Lee lived with us, my mother's dad, and he had an old model, a Model T. And he, by this time, there was felt. Felt was started in 1925. And some way or another, there was ice. Anyway, he'd come home with a block of ice, not 100 pounds, but a block. But we'd have to go get the cows in and milk them. And then we made ice cream. We always had eggs. We had chicken.
Yeah.
And we had milk. And so we'd have ice cream. And that was a good treat.
That's something we take for advantage. For granted. I mean, right now, just go pick up some ice cream. I can't imagine having it only once a year.
I have to turn a crank to make it. Or milk the cows.
Yeah.
I got the old crank ice cream freezer out and had my grandkids a few years back crank some ice cream, and they weren't very impressed. I mean, I thought that they ought to think, about how we used to do it, but now there's lots of people use electric ice cream freezers, and then now there's just really a lot later model.
Well, during that period of time, sometimes we talk about what people did for entertainment, in the free time that they had, or what games you all would play, or things you would do in your free time for fun, is something we talk about sometimes a little bit. Besides make ice cream and eat it all.
My family read books at night, Zane Grey's books.
That's what I was going to say. We read.
Yeah.
We'd read at night. I did most of the reading to my husband. I just had two children, but anyway, I would read books to them at night.
Read out loud?
Uh-huh. We'd pass the time away that way a lot.
You recall that too?
My wife?
Is that something you remember or you recall?
Yeah. We had books, and my mother always read to us, and then one thing that we did a lot, we'd go to church at least three times a week.
Yeah,
we'd go on
too.
Wednesday night, Sunday morning, and Sunday night. Then we'd in between times, we'd have revivals, and we'd go every night when we had those. I don't know about games. We had marbles and a ball, that we'd play ante over. We'd throw it over our house or the schoolhouse. We did that a lot at school that way. And we even played some baseball at school, and we played games like Black Man and Dare Base. Did you remember that?
Drop the handkerchief.
How do you play those games? How do you play Black Man?
You'd have some people at one side and another up by the house, and the others out by the fence, and then there'd be one out in the middle. And we'd try to change sides, and if this guy in the middle caught us, well, then we were the black man.
What was the other one you mentioned?
The dare base. And then we'd have a base that we'd try to touch with our foot, and then we'd run back, and they'd try to catch us. We gave them a dare, you know, and they'd chase us back. Sometimes they caught us, too.
You mentioned drop the handkerchief.
Yeah, we did.
You'll have to tell them how we played it. I think I forgot.
Well, we'd
ring around the rosy.
And one would go around and drop the handkerchief behind you, behind the person, and then they're supposed to grab it up and start after him, you know, and he'd try to get back before he got caught.
I remember playing that one when I was little. What about you in your entertainment?
Well, that's what we did at school. By the 1930s, I was in high school for 4 years, and we had sometimes parties at people's house at night. Of course, we played all of those games. I can't remember playing them in high school. We played basketball. And we had school plays, and I always stayed with a neighbor and rode a horse a mile at night to practice play. We had to practice at night because wouldn't let us practice in school in the daytime. And I don't know. I wasn't a reader. Didn't read till I got older. Now you can't get me out of a book.
Do you remember some of the plays you put on, or what plays you were in?
I really can't remember, but I just remember going at night with my friend, and no, I can't remember the names.
There was one thing else they did in our part of the world. They called them play parties, mm-hmm. and it was kind of like square dancing, only we played outside, and the guys would sing or the songs instead of having music for it, and that. Lots of times I had one a week. You know, I didn't go to very many of them, but I did go to a few.
I did. But our community, we had some musicians with banjos, violins, and guitars. And they sang with it some, but they had the other music. Fact of the matter, most of them were World War I songs that Spud had brought back, Spud McDaniel. She's a McDaniel. And he kind of ramrodded the music for.
One of them, I remember the name was Skip to the Loo, mm-hmm. My darling.
Yeah.
But they were square dances, but you didn't dare use the word dance.
No,
it was against the religion. So they were play parties.
Okay.
Wasn't any difference.
Well, there were dances in my community, but I wasn't allowed to go.
Well, I guess that's part of it.
Right
there.
You could go to a play party,
mm-hmm.
but you couldn't go to a dance.
Yes, well, right.
And the thing is, your folks usually took you to those play parties, and the men would sit and visit. Sometimes the women went along and got to visit, but it was usually the older men were there to
kind of chaperone.
Exactly.
It was a good place to meet, meet and talk to
and
other people. So
in the summertime, we had them every 2 weeks. We'd have a party, and then somebody'd volunteer, well, you can have it at my house in 2 weeks. And that's the only time I ever got in on ice cream and ice. Because somebody would manage to bring the ice, and everybody brought a container of ice cream mix in their freezer. And the men sat there and ground the. And then somewhere along the line, when they got it all thing, you stopped and ate ice cream. And if some of the women had brought a cake or cookies, why, you got that, and if they didn't, you didn't.
The mix usually consisted of milk and eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
my mother didn't have any extracts or spices. Couldn't afford them. You know, you'd go someplace and somebody else would have lemon or vanilla.
We had vanilla.
We did not have any
vanilla
extracts at all.
It's pretty plain ice cream.
Well, it's good if you've got sugar and milk and real heavy cream.
Right.
And we didn't, you know, cheat on the cream like some people made it out of milk.
Right.
But
it was real ice cream.
It
but
was
when you
cream.
Have those cream separators, you usually have what cream you
real,
want to
yeah,
use.
Real thick cream. And
of course, well, we sold that. That's how
true
we helped
too.
To get our groceries, was selling the cream.
I was the only income at our house. But my mom would still dump in the cream.
Yeah.
We had cream and butter. And some people were a little Scotch that did have cows.
Were a lot of husbands met at these play parties?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you mean our husbands? No.
Well, I mean just in general.
I met mine in the first grade.
Did you know then that that's who he was going to be?
No, the teachers along the way said, oh, you know, when we did get married, well, I've known that since the third grade. They were in the third grade. And, you know, I guess he knew it, but I didn't, from all I've heard.
Sounds like these play parties would have been a good chance for, you know, prospective people to meet each other and talk and see what was going on and everything.
Done a little courting, probably.
Yes. That's
I
the reason.
I wasn't allowed to go to a play party to, that after was, I got married.
That was the
and
reason.
It was too late.
Yeah, too late.
Really and
too
truly.
Late.
That was the reason those fathers were there, yeah. I'm sure.
We've heard a few stories about men kind of making sure everybody was out in the open, you know,
mm-hmm.
and old, you know, these the fathers walking around and making sure everybody was
did
accounted for.
They did. There's no way around that. I know I had a friend that had moved away in these dirty 30s. And she came back to visit. Well, she was where she didn't belong. In my dad's opinion, he called her, folks, you better come get her. And they did.
And away she went. Did it?
You mentioned your friend moved away and came back. Did you know people who left because of the dirty 30s?
Again, my husband.
Back? I did. I left.
I did, too. I wasn't gone. I left in June of 35 and came back in November of 36.
We didn't leave till 36. And
see, that 35 is the year of the Black Sunday.
Right.
Came back in the early 40s.
Where did you go?
Arkansas.
Up close to Kansas City, and that Missouri can be the hottest, driest place in the whole world.
Well, now, my husband and I, again, we're after this came up, we're talking, and in 34, the schoolrooms were literally not big enough to hold all the children. They put them together. They had the seats just as close as they could get those desks. Sometimes somebody sat with you because there was not enough. Now, this was when school was out in 33 and 34. There were lots of children. We went back to school in 35. We had all the room in the world. He said, I don't believe there were a fourth of the kids. I'd say that at least half of them disappeared that summer. They were their folks moved.
Yeah.
They were just...
Do you remember losing friends or neighbors or relatives and people moving out?
I had a letter from some kids and scholars in Massachusetts a couple of years ago. They said they'd read this book about the Dust Bowl. And they said, how in the world did you stand it? And my answer to them was that we had no place to go and no money to go.
Mm-hmm. That's the trouble. With.
That was it, so, right there.
We stayed where we were. My folks finally lost the place and had to move. And Daddy got word on work on the road to help with his move. I was already in college. I guess whenever I finished high school, there just wasn't anything else. Maybe, anyway, some way or another, I wound up in college. And
where did you go?
To Goodwill.
Mm-hmm.
It cost me $120 the first year I went to college. That took care of my room, board. My clothes were chicken feed sacks, and Mama dyed some old pieces of material and made my good dress. And I didn't feel any different.
We were all alike. No one else had anything either, so we didn't know we were deprived.
We didn't know we were so poor at that
time. We didn't know we were poor. I'm sure our folks went nuts trying to figure out what they were going to do. But
talking about this dust storm, my dad in 36 had dust pneumonia. And he was really sick for a while, but he got over it and lived to be an old man.
What did you do to try to make someone comfortable? If there's dust blowing around, there's dust pneumonia, what can you do?
That was the year I was in Arkansas. But,
okay.
And I didn't have the money even down there to come back and see about him, but my stepmother was taking care of him. And so he pulled through.
And you headed out too, you left.
Mm-hmm. And we left in 36. 35. We left in 35. We was gone 5 years. The only reason we was gone 5 years, we couldn't get enough money to get back home. Like it up close. We lived up close to Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't like it there at all.
Did you sell your land here?
Me and my husband didn't own land. My dad did, but me and my husband didn't own any land.
You went there to escape here?
To get out. Yeah, our son was small then, and he was having dust pneumonia every year, and the doctor told us we was going to have to get him out of the dust. So we had relatives lived close to Kansas City, so we didn't know any place else to go, so we went up there. We didn't know it was going to be so hot and dry when we went up there, but it was hot and dry.
I'm a living case of this dust pneumonia. I'll let you read it. I can't pronounce it, but it turns out to be black lung. That's what Mayo Clinic, that's the reason I'm kind of incapacitated. Mm-hmm. That my lungs are, the x-rays show all these spots all over it that is dust that went in, and your body will put a membrane around those extra things that aren't supposed to be there, and they become scar tissue. And when they finally took me to the doctor, he says, this great long name that I put out there for you.
Pneumoconiosis or something.
It's a type of pneumonia, I guess, if you go back on it. But he says, black lung. I said, I've never been near a coal mine. He said, that's the same thing. And that to this day, people who work in these elevators where there's so much dust, mm-hmm. says they all get the same thing. Says if it's a miner, it's black lung. If it's a elevator operator, it's got something else, but it's all the same disease.
Dust pneumonia, probably.
Well, you just think of all the people that they died in the 30s and they just kept on dying because they had all this dust in their lungs. And once it's in there, you don't get it out.
My husband, uncle, died with dust pneumonia. He lived down by Texoma, but they had in Kansas at Bennington. They took him back up there, but he didn't last very many days after they took him back up there. Mm-hmm. He died with that dust pneumonia. So a lot of people died.
And the children especially. You know, maybe the preschoolers are... I remember in 35, we happened to be gone for 5 weeks because we got stranded with that. And now came back, there were three little folks had died in that 5 weeks.
Once you got it, if you were a child and you got it, it was...
You kept it.
Yeah.
And if you were...
Mm-hmm. You said your son had it.
Yeah, he had dust pneumonia. He doesn't have any lung. He's grown now. He'll be 70 years old in a few days, and he don't have a bit of lung problems.
Well, he doesn't. We'll see. Yeah,
maybe he was young enough. You got him out of there.
Yeah,
we got him out.
Out of here. Uh-huh.
But that's been my problem all along, was dust as a child, I guess.
Mm-hmm. My son will be 70 years old, 18th, whenever the 18th is, day or two.
So you think if you would have had the means, it sounds like all of you, and some of you did, if you had the money and the means, you would have gotten, you would have left during that.
If you could have figured out where you could go, that was my folks.
Yeah.
Whenever I read The Grapes of Wrath, I think, you know, it's terrible. Have you ever read that book?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the people that went to California, wasn't it?
Yes. And there was a lot of people that thought California would be the answer to
and it was.
Every problem. And, oh, that was... Of course, that was just one story.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was magnified to some extent. But now again, part of ours was my folks homesteaded in Montana. And then they hit a 5 years drought. And they had to leave Montana because there was absolutely nothing. Now, this was back in 1919. Well, they, you might say, had no place to really sit down and settle until they came out here in 1930. And it was a bad deal, too. It was another drought.
Yeah, they went from one.
They'd
to
been
the other.
Through one and then went another one. So I guess you'd say they thought, well, what? Why move? It'll go with us.
You know, over in our country in 1925, it was a real dry year. And then in 1926, they raised good wheat crops. You remember that good wheat crop, Bonnie? My
oh,
dad
too
and
good,
the neighbors
yeah.
around us.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was what caused them to break out a lot of land. This 26, 27, and 28, they could raise good wheat.
Yeah.
And they just wrecked the place.
Huh. You ever hear any Woody Guthrie songs? Woody Guthrie singing about dust pneumonia?
No.
There's a lot of songs written about the dust pneumonia and going to California and stuff during like the Dust Bowl period. Well, let's see. We talked a little bit about the working on the roads, getting work on the roads, and that was probably with the government programs, the WPA.
WPA. WPA. Okay, right. Yeah, my dad worked
on
that.
This was just county, but now the WPA might have paid some, but it was just a county deal. The county commissioner is the one that hired him to work a while.
Yeah. I was just wondering if you remembered any about Roosevelt and the New Deal and the WPA coming through and the government programs.
I remember a lot about it, but I
well, I remember my dad wouldn't have anything to do with it. He didn't want the government telling him what to do, so
yeah.
He would not participate in the farm programs or anything like that, which proved to be a detriment. What I mean, he was just hard-headed.
Right, and we're independent.
Mm-hmm. He wasn't going to have them telling him what to do. And so we didn't have those things that some others did from WPA and so forth.
You remember the government programs? And
I remember hearing about it, but I really didn't know much about it. You know, we just hoped it helped.
Yeah.
It was going to be something, the New Deal would be something that would help us.
My husband worked on the road some at WPA, I remember that.
Bringing in
a little extra cash.
You remember
besides milking the cows and the chickens, hogs.
You remember the they had programs where you would sell some livestock or put some livestock down or leave land fallow for a year or so.
That's when they killed some of the cattle. I remember that.
What was your take on that, or your father's attitude?
Well, he hated to see it do it, but I think they did kill some of ours.
Your dad probably said no way.
Well, they killed them right next to our place. It was a gully, and it was the stupid way that they did it. They just milled those cattle and shot into the herd instead of shooting them in the head or something. And it just made all the farmers and ranchers around there sick at their stomach.
Yeah.
But it was right next to our place where they were killing the ones out there at Fell.
That might have had something to do with his attitude.
I'm sure it did. In fact, wish that thing was turned off. There was someone, the man in charge was from Kentucky, Virginia, I don't know where. But he had the same last name. And he says, you know, I think we're cousins to my dad. And my dad came home and he says, I think so too, but I'm not going to admit it. And he wouldn't even talk to the man. And so now then I turn into genealogy. See, my grandfather came over from England in 1870. And on the same ship, he had a brother that came at the same time, and he went south into Virginia or somewhere in there where my grandfather went into Ohio. And my dad was firmly convinced the man was his cousin. No, sir. And so I never did have any contact when I'd like to know what happened to that great uncle and his family. But so that's how vehement he was.
Yep.
He wouldn't even talk to the man because he wanted to talk.
Yeah. You remember local attitudes towards the government at the time?
I think that most of Daddy had sold or gotten rid of most of our cattle. We might have had a little, but can't remember too much of that happening. I knew about it, but I can't remember.
Any New Deal attitudes, or you remember how your neighbors or friends felt about the government?
I just don't remember.
I just remember the words. It didn't mean anything to me.
Yep.
I tell you, in New Mexico, I'm just 2 miles from the New Mexico line, of course, a little farther from Clayton, but they built a schoolhouse.
Oh.
And they did, I don't know, I felt like it was a good thing. The Seneca Schoolhouse was built by the WPA.
And they're still using the one at Clayton?
The Clayton, and a lot of the furniture in the Clayton School. And there was a lot of work in New Mexico by the WPA.
Well, the WPA did lots of road work.
Yeah.
Down in our country. I think my husband worked on it some.
But you will go over there now and where these canyons are, where you need to go up around a hill. Now, we're talking New Mexico. Those bridges where WPA work are still there and in great shape. For one thing, a lot of that was Mexicans. I don't mean from Mexico. I mean they had come in there 300 years before.
Right.
And they were good stonemasons, wonderful stonemasons. And they built these culverts of hand-laid stone. And they're still there in very good shape. But it's, as you say, that was WPA work. But
yeah,
that was just over the line from us.
There was some WPA in our community, or in where Mexoma, whenever I got over there, and it was on the road, like she said. It was, cause I think Bill worked on the road. Had to drive 8 miles with his team.
Road work seems to be really important around here.
That's what my dad worked on the highway. It's 95 that goes into Texoma now from this road that goes to Guyman. That's where they worked with the WPA.
So do you remember roads improving?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. From what to what?
Cow trails. You know,
yeah,
two ruts.
Just trails. Yeah, just trails. Of course, as long as it was trails, there wasn't... however, when the sand blew off the field, why, it'd fill up those trails, and then you'd have to have your shovel to get out. But... after the graded roads, well, then they kind of caused a little bit of trouble with dirt. Still do.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Maybe road improvement was something good that came out of all
of
this.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We didn't.
Yes.
What we call old 64.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't exist before that.
I think in 37 and 38, it was work that's building it down our way.
Huh. But now the roads were complete change, because no joke, a lot of our roads were two ruts before that.
I remember I came through here in 87, and I bought a little book called One Stoplight.
Not a stoplight in the county.
That's it, not a stoplight in the county.
Norma Jean Butterball. No, her name's not Butterball now.
Young. Probably still one up there.
I bet there's one up there.
And it talked about how the whole entire county, there wasn't one stoplight.
Mm-hmm. Still doesn't have.
No. I was thinking of that yesterday. There's still not. That's funny. Well, something that seems to always bring up memories, or somebody always has stories about, is when kind of times got hard, work was scarce and whatnot, there seemed to be an influx of hobos or tramps or kind of wanderers coming through the area, and attitudes towards those people varied a lot.
Some call them gypsies.
Yeah, carloads of gypsies coming into town and whatnot.
Well, I remember a wagon, covered wagon with gypsies going by our place. I don't remember much that they did. They stopped and wanted some water, and I don't know, maybe they wanted some chickens. I don't hardly remember about, but that one time. But we did have people that walked, you know, just usually just one man at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And like I told you a while ago, we was halfway, it was 20 miles each way to a town. And so my dad would always feed them if they were hungry. He'd feed them. And if it was late at night, and he'd usually let them stay all night too.
They'd do a little work, or would he not ask them to do some work for their food, or?
No, I don't think so.
Our experience was the same, that it was usually men walking, trying to get somewhere to get work. You fed them, and if it was night, they slept in the barn probably. It depended on who they were. Sometimes they got to sleep on the kitchen floor, but not always.
Right.
And they went on the next day,
because
we had no work for them. We had no money.
Right. Do you have any hobo stories coming to your house?
Just right at the moment, I can't think of any, but I'm sure we did. But of course, we was a long ways from town and quite a ways from a main road, and they didn't get that far very much, I don't think, off of the main
since
road.
We was on that main road.
Yeah, you'd got lots of
had more.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like the closer you live to railroad tracks, the more company you got.
Yeah.
That and a highway. A lot of them, what would you say, didn't ride the rails, they walked. And whether they were afraid of getting killed, I mean, there were lots of accidents jumping on and off those trains.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really know, but an awful lot of them just flat walked the highway. And they were looking for work. They weren't bums. They
right.
wanted a job. They had a family back home that was hungry.
Well, I can remember one particular time. There was an old, it was after there were vehicles. It's probably a Model A car that they were driving. And they stopped down the road from our place and sent two children back to ask for food. So Mama fixed up. I know one thing was a bucket of lard. We always had gallon buckets of lard. And I don't know what all, but she fixed up some things and sent. But I don't know
What kind of people
like that do with a bucket of lard?
They probably had a skillet. They begged from somebody else. Because when they send two children back, you know they're panhandlers pretty well.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's what we kind of thought. But she never ever... We didn't have all that many people come along and ask for something. But she always... sent something.
Yeah.
But we probably didn't have a lot of different things ourselves. A bucket of lard, but we generally had lard.
I guess they could fry up something, you know, they could use it to fry up stuff.
Well, it was kind of a necessity back in those days.
We had lots of fried potatoes and beans in our house.
Well, apparently, you know, with the dust storms coming, obviously there was, with the sand blowing and even the occasional big duster, I mean, there seems to be a lot of shoveling going on inside the house.
Yes,
the house.
Oh, yeah. With scoops.
And you didn't have a vacuum to clean up the dust either.
No.
Sweep, 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 and then get the mop bucket and mop till you got it all.
You'd have it. Another dust storm of cleaning up the dust.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I don't know. The only way we protected ourselves about was with a wet cloth over our face when the dirt was so bad.
And what amazed me, because I was a child myself, but they'd have a baby on a bed with a wet wash rag across its face, and it would leave it there. Then there'd be these two little dirty spots where the nostrils were. And as a child myself, I just couldn't feature those babies leaving those.
Don't look like they would.
But they did. At least that one did, you know. And this, here are these two little brown spots. And I suppose the child, as I remember it, was, we'll say, less than 5 months old. And it didn't do this. But we slept with them. You just went to bed with a cloth, wet cloth over your face.
Yeah.
When the dirt was blowing.
Would you, if you would see an approaching, if you knew a storm was coming in, what would you do to, what would you do? I mean, if you saw one coming in.
Get the wet sheets over the windows.
Hurry up and get the chickens in the chicken house if you could, so they wouldn't blow away.
If you had left anything outside, like your wash tub or bucket, you'd be sure to get them in.
And if the washing was on the line, you grabbed
it.
You really grabbed it. And you hoped maybe turn the windmill off. Sometimes the static electricity kept you from doing that. And we had a wind charger. And that, and the only way we turned it off, we had a snap on the turn off, and a bucket of rocks. You ran and grabbed that bucket of rocks and put on that wind charger as quickly as you could.
Would it blow out the batteries, or what would happen?
Well, you always were afraid it would just literally take the propeller off.
Right.
We didn't know, but that was the first thing you got.
Yeah.
But
any dust storm preparations you recall?
Not like I wasn't home when those big rolling. There was probably some, but not like the great big ones. And I just said something about animals. I don't think that we noticed anything like that, but I just don't think there was any particular preparation. I know there was, know some stories about people being lost in those dust storms, but it didn't, you just kind of took it. But I don't really know about my parents and that 135. I was at Goodwill in school. I remember seeing it rolling up and coming, but.
Getting lost seems like it would have been a real possibility.
It was.
That's something I think I would worry about.
It was kind of like this.
Yeah, there was a boy lost, you know, and that. The storm was riding his horse, and the horse come in the next morning, you know, between here and Guyman somewhere, I've forgotten. The horse, the next morning, the horse was there, but the boy wasn't, and somehow the boy got throwed or something and killed him, but the horse come back, but they found the boy.
In a way, if you knew it, and it was these that lasted 2 or 3 days, they'd stretch a rope. You didn't dare use wire. That stuff bit back. But it's like the snowstorms that were so bad back then. to get from the house to the barn, you needed a guide.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have to use one, but I know some of the neighbors did.
You remember tying ropes around to
get around? My dad used a rope in the snowstorm when we came. They had a big snowstorm when we first came to Oklahoma, and he used it. That's the only time I remember that he used a rope to get back to the barn, to the house.
I see that famous picture of that guy with his two kids running to the house.
Our neighbors.
I lived right across. That was the section that was broken up.
Oh.
I lived right across to the north of that picture. Yeah.
Really? And those were your neighbors too?
Mm-hmm.
That was the section that your dad told that guy not to break up.
Yeah.
And that picture proves
Bruce's point.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. Well, do you think that living through that time period affected you in any way? Like, you know, you carry something with you out of those hard times? I mean, like traits or memories that you carry with you to this day?
Frugality. You better
conservative.
Uh-huh.
I save everything.
Never waste food.
My family gripes because I keep it. Somebody might need it.
Yeah.
Whether it was a piece of string or an old coat, you just don't throw things away. Somebody might need them.
You have a hard time with grandkids or trying to explain to them what. Why you feel that way, or
they think you're nuts.
I've got one that's kind of like me, and I've got another one that throws everything in the book away, and she comes into my house why out goes a lot of things. But I most of the things she throws away don't amount to a hill of beans anyway. But I am really conservative, I think, as a result. I don't know if it's as a result. It might be just born in me. But, you know, there's a lot of people go out and start their car and let it run for ages to not get in a cold car. Shoot, I just go out and get in the car. And I don't see any use in using that gasoline.
And we even did that before gasoline got so high, didn't we?
Oh, yes. It's just a part of life. You saved every penny you could.
Were there any community assistance, you know, efforts at raising clothes or community drives to gather food or money or clothes for people during that time? You know, efforts, like if you knew a family was pretty bad, you know, would you work together to help out somebody that you knew needed it?
I didn't know it was community. If you knew that someone had some children that your children's clothes they could wear, you gave them to them and you didn't insult them. They were delighted.
No, I remember I got some that I was glad to wear.
My clothes were nearly all made out of older people's clothes. An aunt sent from California.
And like she mentioned, the feed sacks.
Yes.
That was feed amazing, sacks. You know, that we had all those chickens. And the place where the folks bought chicken feed, they'd get chicken feed sacks with all different kinds of prints, and they'd let you go in and pick out, you know, if it took two sacks to make something. Or sometimes mm-hmm. if you wanted a quilt, well, you'd get five sacks just alike.
You bought your
six.
Chicken feed, but what the print was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you were going to use that a lot of ways.
Yeah. They were pretty sacks.
Yeah, they were.
Did you have a favorite pattern from one of those sacks?
You had to make a match when you bought them because you wouldn't be there the next time.
Yeah.
100-pound sacks. I felt sorry. I felt sorry for the people selling the stuff, because every woman wanted the one that was on the bottom. And you know, they'd be mixed through. There'd be these heaps of sacks. Well, I want four alikes, what we were always bought. You wanted four that were just alike. Oh, just think how those men had to move those 100-pound sacks. Those weigh a little.
Yeah, about 100 pounds.
100 pounds. But they got heavier with time.
Yeah. Yeah, we've a lot of feed sack stories coming through.
Oh, boy.
You know, I wore them to college, and I never did ever feel bad wearing feed sack. Maybe I didn't have enough gumption, but everybody else dressed just
same.
About the same. I mean, they...
Well, somebody that could sew good, they
well,
looked pretty when they got through with them.
They were nice cloths.
Yeah.
In fact, I think I can go upstairs and find sunbonnets made out of them yet.
Huh. I still got some that I was going to make.
Quilts. And those sacks right up there, we used them too.
Yeah. Because
that's where we got our wheat ground.
Hmm.
You got your flour.
Yeah, corn.
So wearing the feed sack dresses and maybe not having, only having a pair of shoes or something didn't bother you? You didn't feel inferior at all? Everybody was.
You were better off than the other fellow was because their folks had enough feed sacks. Some people didn't have all those feed sacks.
How would you, you mentioned bringing clothes or items to families that might need it or receiving those items.
Mm-hmm.
And were you careful to make it not appear like you were feeling sorry for them? You said don't insult them, and I didn't know.
Don't think so. They were just delighted to get them, don't you think?
Yeah.
It wasn't discriminating or.
Where I remember that I got most of mine, I had a cousin that was just a little bit older than I was, and that her mother sent boxes of her like. Coats. I know there was one time there was a coat, and I was just really glad to get that coat. But they usually would fit me all right, you know, when they got here. But I don't remember getting any from any of our neighbors or anything like that. But.
Right. Well, as kind of a closing question, we always ask if you can think back to that time, like what's a what to you most typifies that time period? You know, what memory you might have or recollection most describes that period for you, or what's the most vivid memory you have of that period? You know, or it could be just a small incident or an occurrence or something that happened to you or something you had that brings back that period for you.
Well, when I think about the Dust Bowl, I was called out in that 35 Black Sunday, and that I always think of that. About when we think of how bad it was, how that just rolled in from the north, and you couldn't have any idea of what was behind it, or what was going to happen. But I was with some people that was going back to Texoma that day, and he started, thought maybe he could get far enough to outrun it, but he didn't get very many miles till it caught us, and we had to stop. It was just black, you couldn't even see your hand like that. We had to stop for a while. It cleared up in a little bit, enough that you could drive, but the house we pulled in at, the people weren't home, and it cleared up enough, we got on over to my dad's, and they weren't home. You see, people got caught away from home in it. But that's one of the really memories I have of that Black Sunday.
Well, bringing up that Black Sunday, a lot of people apparently didn't get in on what we were. My folks and I were in a car this side of Buffalo, over there close to Knowles, when it rolled in. And it was just a still. You could see this coming, but there was no wind. But the birds, it was just
going
thousand of them coming, just coming and coming and coming. And when it hit, they were still hitting the car just like hailstones. Huh. Now my husband says, he was out here in the western part of this county, and he said they didn't have the birds, but apparently you did.
Yeah, we had some, maybe not.
Oh, these were just.
I don't remember them hitting the car.
Oh, they did. They're just like big hailstones. I would have always liked to have seen the ground, because we, you know, how many of them it killed, but of course I didn't. When you could get some light, you went on.
Did you have to stop? Was it?
Oh, yes, we stopped. And at that time, there was a wagon. They were fleeing the country with the family, headed for either eastern Oklahoma or Arkansas. And the family was in the wagon ahead, and the little boy was probably 10 or 11, was following with a couple of cows. He had to keep the cows following the wagon. And here this was rolling in, and my dad said to the child, "You've got to get in the car with us." "No, I got to stay with these cows." Well, my dad got him in the car. And how long we sat there, I don't know. But it was a long while, and as you said, you couldn't see your face, hand in front of your face. And when we started on, lights came on behind us. Why? We didn't have lots of rear-end collisions. It just happened. We were the lead car. And you could see these lights behind. When we started, they all came along and followed in everybody's bumper. But that was somewhere around Knowles. It was west of Buffalo. Buffalo was the first town we came to. But the birds were what I remembered. They were just thick.
Your turn.
Well, you know, I don't know that I have any particular thing about, but since this has come up so much, this Dust Bowl business, I think back, and there's everyone was in the same boat.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there was no, "Well, I'm up to here," you know, none. Everyone was in the same boat, and you just you didn't think about somebody being better or looking better, or you just, or maybe it was just me, but I just went with what I had, and, you know, and just.
There just wasn't any discrimination.
Yeah, there wasn't.
She said everybody was in the same boat.
Yeah.
And you know, I, of course, didn't realize it at the time, but whenever I think back now, why, it was just that way.
Do you have a particular memory or
well,
some?
I was sitting here thinking, I guess my memory's not very good.
Well, I know we kind of wrapped this up neatly, but I'm going to go back into the questions again real quick. And I just want to talk about the rabbit drives that we had some people talking.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, and some people were talking about the rabbit drives kind of like, oh, it was exciting. And some people
it
not.
It wasn't to me.
No.
We went to the rabbit drive, my husband and I did. It was over on a kind of ranch land west of our place down in the Griggs community. We went to that rabbit drive, but I did enjoy it a bit, beating those rabbits to death with clubs. I didn't like it at all.
You were involved in the whole process.
Uh-huh. Yes. I helped bring them in, but when I seen what they was doing to them, I, of course, we needed to get rid of the rabbits,
that,
I guess.
That was
really
it. They
did.
Were just...
Yes, they were so thick.
Eating
but
everything.
I think they're beating them to death with clubs, and that's what they did.
Yeah. Any recollection of that on with you three?
I think there was one. I have read about it, and there was some that planned to come from even downstate, you know, and some weather or something, they didn't get to come, and they were really disappointed because they didn't. But some people, you know, just kind of go for things like that.
And then some of them, you felt like it was a necessity.
Yeah.
You had to eradicate those rabbits, or they were going to eradicate you because they ate your crop.
Well, I'd forgotten that earlier, so I think that's about it. Unless there's anything else you want to add, or
I never did go but to one rabbit drive.
That cured you.
That cured me.
It's, yeah.
Well, I don't know that there was an awful lot of them, but maybe there was. I didn't know. I knew that there was some, but
there were a lot of those jackrabbits.
Oh, yes.
I didn't go to a drive. I just heard about them, but I never did have first-hand
well, I went to a drive, but I didn't enjoy it at all.
Yeah, I was there, but I didn't enjoy it.
All right. Well, I want to thank you all for coming here so early.
Thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
One thing, we keep going back to this 35 dirt storm. Mm-hmm. There was one that must have been in 37 that was almost the same out there at Felt. It was at a noon hour, and some of us were going to walk with town. Well, not much of a town, but it was something to do. And we saw this dirt storm coming, so we headed back. And I don't know if you've seen these desk chairs that the desk is mm-hmm. on the side.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I was sitting in one of those in the study hall. Of course, all one side was windows. Another girl was sitting with her on that desk. I had my arm around her waist. Couldn't see her. But she graduated in 38. It's the reason I'm putting it in 37, because I didn't go into high school, huh? What?
I think there was one in 37.
Well, Agnes was sitting on that desk. I didn't go into high school till 36.
Yeah.
And she went out in 38. So it boils down to about 37. Hmm. And this was inside the study hall.
Wow. That's a pretty good memory.
And I had my arm around her waist and I couldn't see her. It was that much dirt in that enclosed room.
Wow.
Well, it's just a mist, like a fog.
All right. Well, I thank you again.